Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Coming up, Lab and I take a deep dive into this year's Ryder Cup. That's right, I said this year's Ryder Cup. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast, brought to you by the new P770 from TaylorMade. Why practice a draw if you've got a fade? If you can hit it high, why master the stinger? Because the key to better golf is having options you can count on. That's why TaylorMade took everything they learned from making P790, the forged face, the speed foam, and all its DNA, and put it into a smaller package. Introducing P770. Let the sibling rivalry begin. Available at your local golf retailer or TaylorMadeGolf.com. Use promo code Golf Channel for free 2-day shipping on any order. Lav, I missed you last week, pal. Before we get into this, I have to set the scene a little bit. I was kind of scrolling through my email on Monday morning, as I normally do, and saw that the PGA of America sent the U.S. Ryder Cup points out, which seems silly because there is no Ryder Cup this year. Of course, it was postponed until next year, and this is wildly early to be sending out points lists. But it did get me thinking when I started to glance down the list that Steve Stricker, having 6 picks, is very unique. And as I sort of studied the list, I got to liking it. I tweeted it. You, of course, circled back around and took an unwarranted shot at me and said, welcome to the club.
Is this the first time you've actually looked at this list? I mean, Steve Stricker, it's been announced he's going to have 6 picks for months now. You have to keep in mind, I've been championing this for years, is that the captain should actually have to do something. And by do something, I mean craft a lineup and a roster to their own liking. And so I love the fact that Steve Stricker is going to have 6 picks. Now, Patrick Harrington on the European side, he's committed to only 3. Which is his prerogative. I do hope that eventually he changes his mind. But was this the first time that you looked at the U.S. standings and said, oh boy, this is going to be delicious fun to figure out who Stricker is going to be picking next summer and next fall?
That's right. If I'm being honest,
I knew
of the 6 picks. This was news. I think I'm even might've written the blog at the time. That, you know, breaking the news that, look, this is the way the PGA of America is going to do this because of COVID, because of the postponement. This is for the reasons I just pointed out, that at the point we were over a year away. There was no reason for me to go down the list and study it. Now that we're a little bit closer, we're within that year window. Yes, Monday was the first day.
So you broke the news that there's going to be 6 captain's picks, but it's just now dawning on you that, oh, this is a good idea. This could actually be really fun.
I don't know that it's a good idea. It's an interesting scenario. I think
it's going to be a good idea, fun
to watch. And you and I are going to disagree with this because, and I only say this speaking more from Steve Stricker's point of view and certainly David Love.
Stricker's the worst possible person.
He hates
to have
6
picks. Yes.
Hates it.
And he very well could go 7-12.
I remember having this conversation.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. I remember having this conversation once with Davis Love, asking him, would you rather have 12 picks or no picks? And without hesitation,
no,
absolutely no picks. It is the worst part of the job for a guy like that. Now, that said, I also asked Paul Azinger the same thing, and he said 12 picks. Put it in my lap. Let me build my team, as you just said. Let me craft it in my own image. It's all about personalities. And Davis Love's personality, Steve Stricker's personality.
They don't want to ruffle feathers. They don't want to hurt feelings. They want as simple of a process as possible with the least amount of carnage.
And to this point, I would even say Jim Furyk's probably in that same scenario. But to this point, it did get us thinking. So what we're going to do here is our own experiment. We are going to start with the U.S. team. You're going to pick your 6 players. I'm going to pick my 6 players. Now, we're going to mix up the rules because this is our game and we get to play it however we want, or we're going to take our ball and we're going to go home. We're going to do the same thing for the European team. Even though Padraig Harrington only has 3 picks, we're going to give Padraig 6 picks because he should. because that makes it
he
fun.
Should have six because it's fun, because this is a great idea, because having more picks is great for the Ryder Cup. All right, so Rex, are we saying, just to be clear on the ground rules, are we saying if we were drafting a team right now, or are you saying if we were projecting ahead to what we would want our team to look like next September?
I feel like we had like a 5-minute conversation about this before we went on air. We could have hashed this out then. What the team would look like now, because we have no idea what player is going to be playing next year at this time. And also, it is also worth pointing out that the way the European list works, they go off of two different lists. They go off
very
the European
confusing.
List and, it,
a lot
and
of
team
points.
List. I'm going to suggest that we just base ours based on maybe the world list, and then we can bounce back and forth between the two just to make it easy and straightforward. But you have the stage, your six American picks.
All right. Well, first of all, let's say who is on the American side right now if qualifying ended, which would be, in order, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, Brooks Koepka, who of course is injured, Justin Thomas, and Webb Simpson. Let's just throw out the fact that Brooks could actually play at Whistling Straits if the Ryder Cup is held right now, which would, I think it's very much uncertain at this point. We haven't heard how the recovery from the knee and hip issues are going, but let's just say Brooks is healthy enough to play, just for the simple fact of moving on with his exercise. So those are the six. No one would argue with any of those players. And so if I'm rounding out this roster, Rex, you have to put Xander Schauffele on that list. I think that's obvious the way that he's playing. He was in the mix, the Tour Championship, of course, where he was the low 72 hole scorer, played great at the US Open as well. Had another chance to win. I think he's obvious. Let's see here. I would put Cantlay. I think my love for Cantlay, you have to go a little bit further down the list, but I would put Cantlay on that. I think my love for him is
17th
well known
on the list right now. Yep. So you're going deep already right out of the gates.
Yep, he's as complete a player as you could find on the PGA Tour. There's two of my six. I put Patrick Reed. He blew up on the weekend at the U.S. Open. He might have a hard time finding a partner who wants to play with him at Whistling Straits, but I think his match play record, at least historically, speaks for itself. I think you got to put Boog. You got to put Boog in this lineup. One of probably the five best players who's played since the PGA Tour restart. Obviously won at Colonial, had a couple other chances to win. I put Boogie. Does have some team match play experience, of course, playing on the President's Cup a couple years ago. I put Wolfie.
I can't believe you waited this deep to put Wolfie, as you affectionately refer to him as Wolfie, which makes it even more uncomfortable for a grown man to refer to someone else as Wolfie. But all right.
Matthew Wolf. I don't want to have a situation with a Patrick Mahomes. Did you see that with Patrick Mahomes' mother chiming in? But look, I think Matthew Wolf has proven himself on a big stage already. Certainly with the plays he's played at the PGA Championship and conducted himself quite well, I must say, final group Sunday at the U.S. Open with Bryson DeChambeau. So that's five. That is five of the six. And players who I have not listed so far, Tiger Woods. Have not mentioned Scottie Scheffler, the reigning PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. Have not mentioned Jordan Spieth, who's still lost in the wilderness. Brendan Todd, I had to really look for him. He was he's 39th in the standings. If the Ryder Cup was played, Brendan Todd's probably going to be picked, wouldn't you think? I mean, the two wins that he had in late 2019 didn't count towards the Ryder Cup standings, but you'd have a hard time leaving him off the way that he's played. But I'm not going with any of those guys. I'm going with Tony Finau. You put him on a big, brawny ballpark like Whistling Straits. I like the way Tony Finau can play. He also played quite well in 2018 Ryder Cup in Paris. He was probably the best U.S. player that week. Thoughts, please.
Well, no, the one interesting omission is a omission that I would say, that you didn't even mention Phil Mickelson's name. Not that I would make him a pick.
Even,
not that
no.
Not that he should even be considered, but the fact
he's not even a notable. Not even a notable.
Not even a notable. Not even
not
also
even
getting
notable.
Votes.
He's a complete afterthought.
I don't know that I disagree with that. I think he would make a very good vice captain as he prepares for however many times
he absolutely would. He should absolutely be a vice captain.
But the fact you throw that much shine in his direction, that you're, I'm not even going to, his name's not even going to come out of my mouth. That's how much little respect I have for Phil Mickelson.
I mentioned Jordan Spieth before the name Phil Mickelson even would cross my mind. I didn't mention Harris English, who's played great this summer as well.
Harris Ingles has. Ricky? And I don't, and I disagree with your
team guy, Ricky, Woodland. Ricky who's is currently on the DL.
Yes, and again, we kind of have to base this on what the reality is right now. I know we're playing this a year from now, but I could see exactly what you're talking about. Boog surprises me because I did not.
You don't want Boog.
I don't. So I'll go ahead and lean into mine because they're very similar to yours with some notable exceptions. And I went straight chalk right out of the gate simply because I, looking at the captain, knowing what we know about
Steve Stricker. This is so, your team. This isn't Stricker's team.
Well, no, but I just know the way this system works. So Xander and Finau are obvious choices in my mind simply because of what Finau did last time in Paris. Him and Brooks were really the only bright spots for the American team way back then. And that was such a terrible week for us. And I also think for them, that is a $5 fine for them, not us. Apologies, please. That took a bad turn for me. P. Reed is who I immediately threw in there. And look, this is about team chemistry. I was in Australia. I remember there were people within that team room that said he was a cancer in that team room. I just don't know, given his record, given his Captain America status, given everything we know about Patrick Reed, how you leave him off. That, like, look, he's not going to be a favorite inside the team room, but he's going to get you points if you put him in an opportunity where he can do that. And so I think you have to put him on the team. Now, my next three are
who
going
would you,
to stun.
Who would you put Patrick Reed with?
I think there's a couple of options, actually.
I think Bryson is a possibility.
I think Webb Simpson is probably.
A possibility. Although, didn't Webb get saddled with him at Royal Melbourne? We saw how that turned out, 0-3?
Yeah, but I don't know if that was chemistry so much as I don't think either one of them were playing all that well, to be quite frank. I mean, you have to kind of look at both those options. So sometimes it's, okay, that chemistry between Tiger and Phil just did not work. Let's never do that again. What a terrible experiment. Let's never mention it again. Or they just played awful. And maybe they were playing awful in the tournament in the weeks leading up to it. And that's probably more to do with it than whatever chemistry may or may not have been missing in my mind. But my next three, I think, are actually going to shock you. I went with Wolfie, as you affectionately refer to your boy, Matthew Wolf, number 11, simply because he's a tour winner. So you can't take anything away from him. However, when I look at the big picture, and this is where I got out of Steve Stricker's shoes, because isn't the definition of insanity doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a new result? Well, isn't it time for us to break out of the mold? So I think
You got to turn the page eventually.
I think so. I think Patrick Cantlay would be my next pick. He's 17th on the list. I just think he's such a calming force on the golf course that you could pair him with really anyone.
Great with Xander at Royal Melbourne.
He's almost like this generation's Webb Simpson, where he is so interchangeable. He's exactly what you want in that situation. And this one is absolutely going to stun you. I went with Scottie Scheffler because of what
I don't hate
seen
it
over the line. What we've seen over the last few weeks, even all the way down at 22, and like you, I would never going to mention Phil Mickelson's name. I'm not quite sure I'd even mention Tiger Woods' name.
No,
if I had to circle around and make excuses. If I had to circle around and make excuses for anyone, it would have been Gary Woodland and Kevin Kisner, simply because Gary is hurt. And again, we have to take the situation as it is right now. And I think Kevin Kisner is a great team player, but there's only 12 spots.
Yeah, and look, I think you compare Scottie Scheffler. He's kind of got that easygoing personality. He's hit it off with Dustin Johnson over the past couple of months. They've played some big tournaments together, of course, including the final group of the PGA Championship. They share a management company. I could see that kind of mentor-mentee relationship brewing between those two players. And I think, look, I think you hit the nail on the head. You have to turn the page at some point. You're going to have Colin Morikawa on that team. More than likely, unless he just absolutely has a terrible 2021, you would think the points that he accrued with the PGA Championship should give him quite a boost. And then you're looking at some of these new wave players, whether it's Matthew Wolf or Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. You just have to implement them at some point. You just can't depend on the President's Cup every 2 years to be this trial period for breaking in these newer guys.
Well, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? We're going to get beat. I mean, let's be honest. Now I'm up to $10. The U.S. team is going to get beat. Is that the worst thing that's going to happen? Because I go back at
because
Paris.
That would be disastrous. It really would. It would be a disastrous result for them to lose.
Do you expect anything else though? I mean,
I expect them to win. I really do.
I do not. And look, I think
you expect them to lose. You think they're going to lose?
I do. I do simply because
we haven't even gotten to Europe. We haven't even gotten to Europe's line.
And on paper, it is going to, trust me, I've done this exercise. On paper, it looks terrible, but it always looks terrible on paper every 2 years. And I am a fan. I thought what they tried to do with the task force, what they're continued to try to do with the task force is a very, very good thing. And you have to try to freshen things up and keep things moving in the right direction. I just don't think we have the culture to get there yet. So we mentioned the European team. We'll get right to it. Now there's two lists. There's a world points list. There's a European points list. I say we go off the world points list, which would put in order Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Perez, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Bernd Weisberger on the team. So I'll leave the floor to you for the next six, Captain Padraig Harrington.
So hold on. We got Victor Perez on this team?
Well, I mean, we have to base it on one of the lists. And otherwise,
so you got world points. Yeah, I mean, yeah. He played well in early 2020.
European points.
So you got Fleetwood, you got Rahm, you got Rory, you got Victor Perez,
Fitzpatrick,
Fitzpatrick. Ooh, see, I'm not even sure I love those automatic qualifiers. I mean, Weisberger, he had a great end of the 2019 season. He hasn't done a whole lot this calendar year. Victor Perez, like we mentioned, had a couple good start, so he hasn't done much this summer as well. I do like the fact that you could have Matthew Fitzpatrick. He's played well. He plays tough golf courses exceptionally well. I do love that. So now we're looking at six guys. To me, obviously, you have to have Tyrrell Hatton. He's kind of that spark plug, the fiery guy that every team would want. The guys seem to really like him, even if he is a bit of a character and a loose cannon. I like him a lot. Let's see. I think you have to have Victor Hovland, PGA Tour winner, of course, Puerto Rico, second best rookie on the PGA Tour in 2019-20 season. I think he'll make his debut in Wisconsin. And then this is where I think it really falls off. You could make a case for Danny Willett. Right now, he would have qualified using the world points list based on the way that he's played over the past year or so. Don't love it. Not going to get overly excited about it, but I think you have to put Danny Willett. So now I've got three picks left. I think you can make a case for Sergio. Look, he just won at the Sanderson Farms. Statistically, he's still a tremendous ball striker. His Ryder Cup record is still excellent. I mean, he's 22 and 12. So I think until further notice, I know he's going to be 41 in January. I think you got to put Sergio on that team. And now you're looking at guys like Lee Westwood. We saw what happened last Ryder Cup in the States. You got Stenson, who's barely played in 2020. You have Justin Rose, who's yet to win in 2020. Paul Casey, Thomas Peters, Ian Poulter. I'm going to go. This is where I'm going to start to get a little crazy, Rex. If I'm filling out this roster, I want Matt Wallace on that team. I'm not sure he's the most likable character. I think you could potentially have some chemistry issues that the Americans have in abundance. But I would put Matt Wallace on that team. And
I don't think you thought this through.
I think I would do Paul Casey.
Oh, wow.
I think I would do Paul Casey. I'm really curious to see. I know we have to pick this team right now, but I am really curious to see if there are any other players from this next wave of European talent. If you include Victor Hovland in that, who I think, of course, is leading the movement. If you can have a player like a Matthias Schwab, who was terrific at Vanderbilt and has made his presence known on the European Tour. If you have someone like a Bob McIntyre, who had played well in 2019 and hasn't done a whole lot this year. Erasmus Højgaard always reminds me of Rex Højgaard, but Rasmus Højgaard,
no relation.
No relation. Has played as well as anybody during the European Tour restart. I know he hasn't played against anybody, but someone like him, Thomas Dietrich, Marcus Schindholt. I think one of those guys is going to step up in 2021 and make it really tough for Padraig Harrington to leave him off. But right now, at this point, if we're picking this team right now, I think you'd have to put Paul Casey in that mix. He did tie for second at the PGA Championship. So those are my six picks. Hatton, Willett, Sergio, Hovland, Casey, Matt Wallace.
No, I like that. And I can certainly see, I did not consider Paul Casey, and I probably should have, although he has not really played very good golf since the restart. And I think
he's tied for second at the PGA Championship.
But he'll tell you that was smoke and mirrors. I just think that he just hasn't played his best golf. And he'll tell you for it's probably a reason simply because he doesn't like playing without crowds. And that's a whole different conversation that luckily we don't have to have right now. But I like those picks. And I'm going to kind of go the opposite way of what I went with the U.S. side simply because when you look at the U.S. team, all right, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. The Europeans want the same result. So I'm going to immediately jump on the likes of, as you pointed out, Sergio Garcia for all those reasons, his Ryder Cup record, his ball striking, his veteran leadership, what he brings to those matches. And he's sort of the heart and soul when it comes to that team. So Sergio's one for me. Lee Westwood is two. And if you look at the way
you ever seen Lee Westwood putt?
Oh, sure. And it sure can.
You remember Hazeltine? You remember Hazeltine 4 years ago?
I'm not putting him in a putt-off or a chip-off, for that matter. Luckily, there's a lot more that goes into these matches, but he has not finished outside the top 20 in his last four starts. I just think, veteran leadership, he's going to be a captain very, very soon. I really like the way that one plays out. And this one's really going to throw you, so save your indignation for this one. Martin Keimer.
Rafa?
No, Martin Keimer. Yeah, he's number 39th on the list, so I had to go deep for that one. He has experience. He won the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits in 2010. I just think he has shown flashes of himself. I think he could very well be what Adam Scott was to the international team a few years ago when Adam Scott was floundering and he was picked and he came out and it sort of rejuvenized his career and rejuvenized his game. I really think that this could be that opportunity for him. I love Victor Hovland and I think he's comfortable on the big stage. We've seen it on the PGA Tour. That was an easy one for me. And then for me to round out the team, I like Hatton as well for the reasons you pointed out. I think he's comfortable in the United States and I think he brings a fire. Maybe it's a little bit too much fire sometimes, but I do think he brings fire. And then my last one is a little out there. You're totally going to, but Alex Noren, he's got three top 10 to finish the season. He finished 17th at the US Open. I just think he's going to be what Francesco Molinari was without Francesco Molinari on this team. I think he's going to be that guy that goes out, hits a lot of fairways, hits a lot of greens, doesn't make any mistakes, and sort of rattles the opponent. So that lines up mine. I go with Sergio, Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, Victor Hovland, Hatton, and Alex Noren.
So just to be clear, neither of us are putting Henrik Stenson on this team. Neither of us are putting Justin Rose on this team. Neither of us are putting Ian Poulter on this team. Neither of us are putting Francesco Molinari or Graham McDowell on this team. There's no Thomas Peters, who, of course, teamed with Rory 2016 and was dazzling and has played some pretty good golf this summer. And you don't like Paul Casey. You don't like Paul Casey despite being 21st in the world.
I don't, simply because he hasn't played great since the restart. So, yes, I don't like Paul Casey. And even though I think what he brings to this team and having the opportunity to get back on the team 2 years ago in Paris was huge for him and almost rejuvenated his career. But, yes, no. Now, in Ian Poulter, I just, again, haven't seen anything out of his game. I mean, if you can look at all these players that you just pointed out, which, yes, they're all names and they're all people who are going to be considered. But if you look at their game this year, their form, how they're playing at this particular moment, I just don't know how you put them on that team. Ian Poulter being the first one. He is 69th on that list that we're working off of right now.
Yeah, I think Europe, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in 2021 because this is a team, it's almost like a franchise if you look at a big picture, that's kind of in transition at this point. You have this older guard, whether it's Sergio and Rose and Stenson and Casey and Poulter and Westwood. I mean, these are all guys who are, if they're not already 40, they're getting awfully close to crossing that threshold. And I think it's pretty obvious that their best golf is behind them. So you have this old guard and you have this next generation, which I think is led by Victor Hovland, but they haven't quite established themselves yet. Right? Like I think Europe would love to have one more year with that core of aging warriors. I really do. I think they'd love to have one more Ryder Cup out of them. And then when you get to 2020, or now it'll be 2023, I think once you get to 2023, then you can actually turn the page like the Americans are starting to do and infuse some of this new blood, whether it's a Marcus Schinholt or a Thomas Dietrich or Pepperell or Matthias Schwab, you know, the next wave that's coming, the Sam Horsfields of the world. I think that's what they'd love to do, but I'm not sure that Keimer and Westwood and Casey and Stenson and Rose are going to play well enough in 2021 to make it easy for Padraic. I think he's going to have to do a lot of justifying if those guys don't play well and the new wave doesn't quite play well enough to go out and grab one of the spots from him.
I would agree with that. And to look at it even larger picture, this is based on the idea that Ian Poulter is not going to turn things around and earn his way onto the team, or Paul Casey's not going to continue to be consistent, which he has been over the last few years. But let's say they don't. Let's say all of these old war horses, as you pointed out, continue to fade next year. It's almost as if the pandemic robbed them of that one final go-round, right? Because had they played this year, I don't think there's any doubt that Ian Poulter, Paul Casey, Lee Westwood, the rest of them would have found a way to be on that team, whether as captain's picks or qualifiers. So you could almost make the argument that the one-year delay probably hurt Europe more so than it hurt the United States.
Absolutely. And we didn't even talk about Molinari, who's making his
we will
his return this here week. In Vegas. GMAC. I mean, this is the end of the road for a lot of those guys. If the 2021 Ryder Cup, if they even make it at all, it is in all likelihood going to be their last go round, being on a European squad. So I think even more so for the European team, how those guys play in the first 9 months of 2021 is going to be even more interesting than what happens with the American side. Because I think you can make a solid case for 20 guys on the American side. I don't think that's the case for Europe. I think you have potentially you're going to have a hard time rounding out that 9 through 12 spot.
Simon, do me a favor. Tag that sound end of the road for the Europeans. I want us to be able to re-rack
for part of the older guard.
Please tag
it has
that.
To be. It has
regardless.
To be.
I want to be able to re-rack that next year when all of the war horses show up and rub his nose in it. So I can just say, here we go. Everyone, I can play it for the entire team and you can get called out in next year's Sunday press conference.
Isn't Lee Westwood still beefing with you on Twitter, or is that
was world ranking related? I know better than to go head to head. I don't beef with Europeans when it comes to the Ryder Cup because their game is too strong. I do not have that strong of a game when it comes to the world ranking. Now I can talk a little bit about that. Now, as you mentioned, Francesco Molinari is playing this week in Las Vegas. It seems like everybody decided to make Las Vegas sort of their first start of this season, not counting the U.S. Open, which technically was part of the new season. But if you look at it, it was Bryson DeChambeau, Cameron Champ, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Morikawa, Webb. Go on down the list. All of them are making their first non-major start of the season. And it has everything to do with timing. They're going to be in Vegas for 2 weeks, and then they're going to go to L.A. for the Zozo Championship. Kind of perfect tune-up for the Masters. Before we get into the field, I do want to touch on Francesco because it's such a fascinating, I can't wait for this press conference tomorrow because he has been so honest in the past. And I want to hear why he decided, to really pull the plug on his year. He wasn't playing great when the pandemic hit in March. It was clear he wasn't comfortable in the position he had been thrust into as suddenly this world beater and potential major champion all the time. And I think he used the pandemic and the quarantine as a way to restart. And you don't get that very often. Not when an athlete is in his prime where he's willing to take a knee and decide that, look, it's best for me to be at home with my family. We really didn't have that in golf. He is sort of the outlier when it comes to this.
I mean, he needed a total reset. I mean, this was a player who was lost. And I'll still stick by what I'd said for months. And it's that Tiger Woods broke him. At the Masters, what happened on the 12th hole?
It's a good
broke
line.
Francesco Molinari. It's indisputable. If Francesco had gone on to win that Masters, he would have had just an incredible 2018, obviously, where he won the Open Championship, where he outdueled Tiger there head to head. Went 5-0 at the Ryder Cup, had just won Bay Hill a couple weeks prior, and then wins the Masters, and you're looking at a guy who's on top of the world. Instead, what you had is a player who has not finished in the top 10 since. Francesco Molinari has not finished in the top 10 since the 2019 Masters. So what happened? What happened is he lost confidence. What happened is the bulletproof aura that he was probably feeling was shattered. What happened is he seemed to chase a little bit of distance, lost his game, And now he has not played since the Players' Championship was canceled. I'm curious. Obviously, my expectations are not very high for Francesco Molinari. But if anyone can figure it out, you would hope a guy can figure it out after 7 months away.
7 months away with his family, away from the game. I've spoken with the swing coach a few times over the last few months and tried to figure out what's happening. And the extent of his practice is walking in the backyard in his garden and swinging a golf club. I mean, this is not someone who for a very, very long time seemed to have any interest in getting back to his day job. And the idea that Tiger Woods broke somebody is not new. I mean, you can make an argument that Tiger broke Ernie Els back in the day. You can make an argument that there was a time frame when he was pretty much breaking Phil on a weekly basis. And I like that. I mean, I think it makes a very good headline. It certainly makes for a very, very good story. I don't know that it's true. And I don't know that we're ever going to get the truth out of him, because Francesco is not the type of person to really talk about these things openly, because I think there was other things that factored into this. As you pointed out, he was on top of the world. If he wins that Masters after everything that he had done the year before at the Ryder Cup, at the Open Championship, everything else he had accomplished, suddenly he is the best player on the planet, at least for that small window that we look at these. And it's clear that he was not comfortable with that position. Now, maybe it was getting in that spotlight with Tiger Woods and realizing, I don't want to be here. And he's not the first player to get to the top of the mountain and decide, this isn't what I wanted it to be at all, and sort of take a step back. You and I work with a guy like that. I mean, I would make an argument that David Duval got to the top of the mountain and decided that this isn't what I thought it was going to be, and I'm better off going in a different direction. So it will be fascinating to see what he says tomorrow when he speaks with the media on Wednesday in Las Vegas. And it will be interesting to see how that reset has applied to his game, because certainly he needs to turn things around. As you pointed out, he has been dreadful over the last really 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah, he really has. And as you mentioned, it's a stacked field this week in Vegas. Really interesting to see, of course, Bryson DeChambeau making his first start since he blew away the field at Wingfoot. This will be a good test for him. It's a place and a golf course at TPC Summerlin where he's finished T7, first T4 over the last 3 years. It's a good place to kind of pick up where he started. He talked after winning the U.S. Open that he was going to start testing a 48-inch driver. 48 inches, of course, is the maximum allowed under the rules of golf. Trying to hit that 200-mile-an-hour ball speed. That's kind of the holy grail for Bryson. He thinks a 48-inch driver will help get him there. He talks to the media on Wednesday. I find it hard to believe that he would actually put a 48-inch driver just 2 weeks after winning the U.S. Open. But stranger things have happened when it comes to Bryson. But I am curious to see how he plays, just because of his success that he's had previously on this golf course before he even got enormous.
Did you happen to catch the Golf Central podcast brought to you by TaylorMade last week that I hosted when they interviewed Mike Shea?
I did not.
Okay. Well, it was, I asked
thanks,
Mike Shea.
Thanks for Bryson. Listening. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. We need the clicks, download, re-download. I asked Mike Shea, his longtime swing coach, if 200 is obtainable as an average. We know he can get there. And
yes,
he can laughed me off the podcast. He said 215 is going to be the average. So stay tuned. I did not get the impression that they're reaching the ceiling of anything. The other part of that, had you listened, was he went into great detail, which you would expect from Bryson DeChambeau's swing coach, in explaining how he knows how you can Bryson proof a golf course, and has nothing to do with adding tees. So go back and listen to that. I thought
it was
fascinating.
It's technique. Adding trees.
No, that wasn't Mike's. But thanks. You want to shout
it,
out
was
something
it adding,
else?
Was sand, it adding water, breathing dragons?
Sure, why not?
What did you before we go, Rex? What did you make of Sergio's win? I know you were fixed to your television all Sunday watching that fierce battle in Mississippi.
There were other things going on as well. I mean, there was a lot of football, and I think that I was. Smoking
I think you were smoking. Were you smoking ribs?
I was. I woke up early too because we had friends over in the afternoon. I got to get those out of the way because hate. When you're smoking stuff, and you know this, so when you're smoking something and people come
horrible.
Over and
they
sit there and just stare. And how much longer? And hours. The answer is hours.
They're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. I'm hungry. Well, I'm sorry. if you have a brisket, it has to rest for 2 or 3 hours. Now, ribs, you can pull them off and eat them within 5 minutes. But it is uncomfortable. The wife is in the kitchen glaring at you as your mane, the smoker thing. Come on, just hurry up already. Come on. How did the ribs turn out?
They turned out well. Yeah, I seem to ribs are I've gotten under control. I'm very good at ribs. It is going to be a long time before I tackle another brisket. I will say.
Oh man, it really is just confidence crushing. It is Tiger at the 2019 Masters confidence crushing if you screw up a brisket.
Well, the brisket broke me. Now you can say whatever you want about Tiger and Francesco, but the brisket broke me. There is no doubt about that.
I would totally agree with that. I just bought two new meat probes because I was so flustered that mine didn't cook correctly. So I've dropped $200 just on meat probes alone. Forget the $25 brisket that I bought. I've now spent $200 on meat probes trying to perfect this damn thing.
No, and I can do pulled pork. I've done that a couple times before. I can't do chicken wings to save my life.
I just did chicken wings. Did you see garlic?
Yes,
you see my garlic parm wings?
They look very good.
Crispy bits of char. Oh, you gotta love it.
That'll be in the next podcast. We'll do a Golf Central podcast barbecue version. But for this week, that'll do it. We'll see you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.